student body elections are supposed to teach the virtues of democracy. But often, students end up learning just as much about how messy democracy can be. The 1999 movie Election hilariously captures just how flawed class elections can become. Matthew Broderick plays a civics teacher who tries to get a popular football player to run for class president.
Well, Mr. There's...
Paul, what's your favorite fruit?
Pears.
Pears, good. Okay. Let's say...
Oh, no, wait. Apples.
Apples. Fine. Let's say all you ever knew were apples. Apples, apples, more apples. You might think apples were pretty good, even if you got a rotten one once in a while. But then one day, there's an orange. And now you can make a decision. Do you want an apple, or do you want an orange? That's democracy.
I also like bananas.
Exactly.
In the opposite corner, Reese Witherspoon plays Tracy Flick, an ambitious incumbent who assumed she'd be running unopposed.
You might think it upset me that Paul Metzler had decided to run against me, but nothing could be further from the truth. He was no competition for me. It was like apples and oranges. I had to work a little harder, that's all. You see, I believe in the voters. They understand that elections aren't just popularity contests. They know this country was built by people just like me who work very hard and don't have everything handed to them on a silver spoon. It's not like some rich kids who everybody likes because their fathers own Metzler Cement and give them trucks on their 16th birthday and throw them big parties all the time. No, they don't ever have to work for anything. They think they can just all of a sudden one day out of the blue waltz right in with no qualifications whatsoever and try to take away what other people have worked for very, very hard their entire lives.
Running for office is a really vulnerable thing to do. Whether you're 16 or 60, I mean, you're really putting yourself out there, not just advocating for an agenda, but asking people to like you. I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard. And in honor of Independence Day, we're bringing you back to a show we recorded on Election Day 2016. It's all about running for student government. We like to think that childhood is a simpler time, but is it? A local musician remembers her bid for highest office at Bryant Elementary back in the day.
1991? I'm old. Yeah, 1991, fifth grade. My name is Anna Cole. I'm from Kansas City, Missouri. I was running for class president against a girl who shall remain nameless. We lived in the same neighborhood, and she was the cool girl, and I was like a dork. We were rivals in Girl Scouts, rivals at church camp. Since we were little, we were rivals. I was kind of a high-achieving kid anyway. I was always student council, and I did win Sergeant at Arms the year before, but I wanted to be president. I really wanted to win, and I really wanted to win against her. Yeah, I remember my campaign. There were posters that we handmade out of puffy paint, and I also spent countless hours really with little index cards, handing them out as like flyers. We even called students. One was to a boy that I had a crush on, and he told me he didn't care and hung up the phone on me. It was really tragic. I didn't give up on him, though. We also gave speeches, you know. I have no idea what I talked about in fifth grade. I'm sure it was some promises about more recess or something. Even that was not that we needed a longer recess, but that I knew they would like if we had a longer recess. I think from the beginning, it was more about power and popularity and control than the issues. The election, of course, I remember that day. I remember being dressed to win. I had a favorite shirt. It was red with Mickey Mouse on it. And I wore it because I thought I looked super cute. I also wore a headband because Hillary Clinton wore headbands. I remember casting my own vote, and I did vote for myself. And then we waited, and we waited, and we waited. And it was taking way longer to count the votes because my mother was arguing about who was counting the vote, which was the mother of my opponent. They made an announcement over the PA system. I ended up losing by 2 votes. school let out, I walked out, and there were the school buses lined up in front, and they were all chanting. Two of them had my signs, like, and they had them out the window, bus window, going, Anna, Anna. What's interesting to me is that the silliness is still, particularly, in my opinion, in this election, very much there. So there's definitely a parallel to my fifth grade election. The name calling and mudslinging and not really discussing issues per se, just sort of pandering to the views and fears of the masses on either side and not really fixing any problems. It's childish and dangerous at the same time because it's not fifth grade. It's the United States of America. So it's the real deal. You can't always get what you want. But if you try sometimes, well, you might find you get what you need.
That was Anna Cole. Her story was produced by KCUR's Andrea Tudhope. Personally, I never ran for anything, so we'll never know whether I could have mobilized the entire school for extended recess privileges. But one of the producers of this show, Sylvia Maria Gross, has a great story about running for office, so I asked her to come in and tell it. Hi, Sylvia.
Hi, Gina.
You ran for, was it class president?
It was class president in second grade. So my memories are kind of hazy of the whole process, but really the outcome and the voting process is what I remember the most.
So what happened?
Okay, so what happened? I mean, I think it was just a one-day thing in my vague memory, but the teacher asked, who wanted to run for class president. I think it was an exercise in democracy, and three of us decided we wanted to run, and we all, had little slips of lined paper and wrote down the name of the person we wanted to vote for. But I just, at the moment, kind of froze and didn't know whether it would be conceded or even allowed to actually vote for myself, even though I put my name out there. So I just, in the end, decided it was too conceited to vote for myself. I think I was working out what that word meant and voted for somebody else, and I lost by one vote.
That is so amazing, the one vote detail when your vote could have made that difference.
It could have, but I didn't know whether you were allowed to do that, to I guess, have that kind of confidence in yourself.
I want to back up about this thing about the word conceited. That is such a funny word. It's the perfect word because that is a word kids use a lot. And then somehow we stop using the word conceited. I mean,
it's funny. Yeah. I mean, it seemed as a, this negative thing to be conceited, to be full of yourself. And looking back, I am sort of concerned about why I thought that or why I didn't feel like putting yourself out there in a bold way was a positive thing.
Or that after asking everyone else to vote for you, that you would even dare to make another decision, mm-hmm. which is, I think, how we would see it with adults. Like, if one of the presidential candidates did not even vote for themselves, that would be such a statement about their platform in a way.
Yeah, not having faith in themselves. But in this way, like, the second grade mentality was like, I wanted my classmates to prove that I could be president, but I didn't want to sort of, I was waiting for them to tell me.
That
not
is
waiting
so
for
sweet,
myself.
Though.
I think it's sad.
It's both sad and sweet because you wanted the people to speak.
Yeah.
But just that you didn't think you were one of the people.
Yeah, I guess not.
Aw. What do you think this taught you about politics? I mean, it sounds like it taught you something about confidence.
Well, I think it probably took a long time to learn this, but I definitely realized, yeah, you can vote for yourself and you should vote for yourself if you're going to put yourself out there to run.
And does that apply maybe to other things in life?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's just having the faith publicly in yourself or privately even, because it's not like anybody saw my vote, you know, except for the teacher. But putting your faith in yourself if you want to put yourself out there.
Did you ever run for office again?
Not that I can remember, really. I think I chose other ways to have my influence.
It's funny because, you know, I was mentioning before that I never ran, and I don't even remember considering running. And so I'm interested in that, too. Like, what makes some kids say, I'm going for it, and some kids just either not interested or, yeah, it could have been. If it was a confidence thing for me, it was maybe so extreme that I just couldn't even imagine it because, yeah, I don't remember even making the decision.
Well, I would say that I was into the idea of being president in other ways, like the drama club. I kind of founded and became the drama club president and ran the drama club with an iron fist in fifth and sixth grade. And then later on got into debate and founded a forensics club in my high school. So I was into leadership, just not in the like student government model, I think.
If you start a club, you can run it.
Exactly.
Central Standard is off to a break. Sylvia Maria Gross, thank you so much for your story.
You're welcome.
We'll be right back with Kansas Cityan stories of running for class office. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned. I'm Gina Kaufman, and you're listening to KCUR's Central Standard. It's election day, and most of us voting have never run for office unless we ran for class president or something like that back in school. That's the closest most of us have come to knowing what it's like to have our names on a ballot. So today we're sharing those stories. Let's talk with Keith. He joins us from Kansas City. Hi, Keith.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What about you?
I'm good. Thank you.
What's your story?
Well, I ran for student body president in high school, and I was running against my best friend. We had grown up together and played at each other's houses all the way through our youth. And the truth be told, he was quite a bit smarter than me. And so in high school, you know, things get – I played sports, and I was a little more outgoing. He was super smart, and he got up on the stage, and he said – this is not a personality contest. And it hurt me. And I was like, I was thinking, oh my gosh, you know, here's my best friend. But at the same time, I kept thinking to myself, well, it really is, because all we're talking about here are more dances or, you know.
Yeah, there aren't really issues at that age. I mean.
No, there's not. And it seems kind of silly. And I ended up winning, but it strained our relationship a little bit.
You know.
And I always felt bad.
When you look back at that election and think about sort of an issueless election, do you think that what you realize about the social dynamics of one candidate running against another, does it apply as you watch government politics play out?
A little bit, because certainly I see this election, although I wasn't the Trump because I wasn't hateful and mean, but Hillary is the policy wonk, and my friend who ran against me was the policy wonk. And I felt, you know, like, this guy probably should be the student body president. But I got elected because I was friends with more people, I guess. I was a little more outgoing. By the way, he went on to become a doctor in the Army and was, you know, very successful person. And so it didn't hurt him, by the way, to lose the class election.
He survived the loss, which is maybe the most important lesson that you can learn, is that life goes on after you lose an election. But I'm now joined in the studio by Stu Schaefer, who began his bid for office to show that elections were a farce. Stu, when was this? What grade were you in?
Hi, Gina. This was junior in high school, and this was in the early 1970s, so the times really influenced it. I had, you know, like many people in my generation, gotten radicalized by everything that was going on at the time, including the war in Vietnam and other issues. So my friends and I decided to run for student body president as yippies.
And what are yippies?
Yippies were...
I know about yuppies and I know about hippies, but I'm not sure I know about yippies.
I would say yippies kind of in between yuppies and hippies in a sense. Yippies were a play on the word hippie. They were counterculture people, but they were politicized. They were political anarchists, really. And looking back on it, they were pretty nihilistic. You know, they didn't really believe in much of anything. They just wanted to protest everything. And so that's why, you know, we thought, well, student body elections don't really mean anything. We'll make a mockery of it, like they were, you know, making a mockery of other politics in the country at large. We did have a platform, though.
So you were inspired by this larger movement to take on some of those tactics and some of that personality and bring that into your high school elections?
Yes. The people that I was in, closest friends with were, people who were in school plays and, artists. And at the same time, I had been a football player and I played music and, so I think I was fairly well known. But I was in a real counterculture kind of group of people. And so that's what appealed to us most.
So how did you run your campaign? Did you have buttons, campaign paraphernalia?
I don't think we did. I think we did print some flyers because I remember we drew up a platform. I think our first position was to end the war in Vietnam immediately.
Through student government?
Through student government. Well, that's part of what we were saying was that student government isn't really going to deal with the serious issues. Release all political prisoners, that sort of thing. And so we did have an assembly, which is where you were supposed to give your big, campaign speech. And I remember starting mine, Children of Poseidon, and the crowd went wild. And of course, they got into sort of the mockery and party kind of atmosphere. I thought I probably, was getting a lot of support, but I didn't really want it.
You didn't want the support?
No.
Why not?
Well, my position was that it really was meaningless. I was really trying to, I guess, in a way, expose student body elections as just kind of a way for, I felt, kids to sort of, prepare themselves for, sold out political kind of careers. And I wasn't about to do anything like that, so.
But wouldn't votes for you have meant that other kids agreed with your position?
Well, that's exactly what my favorite teachers were telling me. And that was really the lesson that I learned from them was if I would have been more serious about it, I probably could have won. And I could have used student government as a platform to really publicize some issues and probably make some differences in our school and, change the atmosphere or, really do some positive things. And so that kind of sank through to me afterwards and made a difference when, I went forward after high school.
But wait, so you didn't want to win, but people were supporting you and you didn't want their votes. Did you actively do something to dissuade them from voting for you?
Yes. At one point in my speech, kids in the crowd, I think the football team, started chanting the name of our starting center on the football team. And he was a friend of mine. I liked him too. And so I...
And you staged that?
No, we didn't.
No, okay.
That was
okay.
Spontaneous. So they were shouting his name and I said, oh yeah, vote for him. And so, that became a big, whoop and holler in the crowd. And I think if I remember right, he came down and, finished my speech for me. But then they elected the other kids, so.
Did any of this change your perspective? I mean, you talked about how it changed your perspective then. Does it change, I don't know, like, did it change how jaded you seem to have felt?
Yeah, really it did. I don't know if jaded at that point in my life would have been a good description, but maybe cynical. And I think I realized, how serious the crises were even then that we were facing. I mean, the 1970s, we've been in crisis all my life. And so, I felt that I really needed to do something with my life to, make a serious difference. If I felt that we needed radical change in the world, then I needed to devote my life to working towards that and in a serious and organized and disciplined way. And so that's really what I have done, I feel. I've sort of every step I've taken in my life, I've worked toward those kinds of goals.
Do you still think that elections are a farce?
No, I don't. I think, and that's really kind of something that I've thought about during this election is people who are saying that, I have argued with them and said, you may not believe in either one of the candidates. You may think that the system is broken or whatever, but somebody's going to be there, and they're going to make a difference. And so, you have to take that seriously. I think.
Might as well be the one you want.
Right.
Well, Stu, hang on with me. I'm going to talk now with Michael in Brookside. Hi, Michael.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Tell me your story.
Well, I ran for student council in junior high, lost twice, got on finally freshman year of college, or high school, and eventually got to the point where I was going to run for vice president of the student council. And my speech teacher, Mr. Harold Keller, God rest his soul, said, you know, you're going to run for vice president, don't sell yourself short. And that convinced me to run for president, and I won. And I think the don't sell yourself short has stuck with me. And I still, I don't know if this is totally what did it, but I do still love politics. God help me, but I do. So,
as an observer and voter, or as...
Yeah. Yeah, I like to be up on the issues. I never miss a... I watched all the debates, and I watched, and I think the democratic process is so important. So, like, the Inauguration Day, always take Inauguration Day off and celebrate that.
Do you think that staying up on politics as a voter and as just a participant in our democracy, do you think that that is a form of not selling yourself short? Because it seems like that was presented to you as running for office, but when that's what you took from it and it got you hooked on politics as a voter, that interests me.
Well, I mean, I think it's true. Your vote matters. I think your vote matters. And I think, the guy was just saying, if you don't vote, then somebody else is going to make that choice for you. And you may not be the deciding vote, like the woman who, she lost her fifth grade by one vote that she didn't cast for herself, which is terrible, a terrible scar. But, your vote counts. Your vote matters. Your voice matters. In a democracy, your voice matters. And being educated about the issues and the candidates as much as you can be. And there's certainly some emotion in it as well. But it's important to participate.
Well, Michael, thanks for that call.
Okay. Take care.
And now we're going to talk to Susan. Susan's calling from Overland Park. Hi, Susan.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. How about you?
Good. In eighth grade, I transferred out of public school into a private academy. And I wanted to make new friends and just kind of make myself known. So I decided to run for class president. And we had, it was a small enough school that we didn't have an organized cafeteria. We brought our lunch 4 days a week. And then on one day, we could bring in lunch from an outside restaurant. And I thought it would be a good platform to run on Taco Bell. So I ended up winning the election.
Wait a minute. What do you mean by you ran on Taco Bell? What was it exactly you were proposing?
I was proposing that once a week, we brought in lunch from Taco Bell. And the student council would make a small profit on that and be able to spend it on an end-of-year party. And it ended up being a good platform because I won, and we got to bring in Taco Bell once a week.
So you really did change things in your high school in a way that does matter to most teenagers, which is access to a food they like.
Yeah, I think that's probably why I won. it was a lot of fun. It taught me a lot about organizing and budgeting. And I got to work closely with the treasurer so that we could make sure that we were making enough of a profit on each of the burritos that we sold and saving enough so that at the end of the year we could organize and have a big hullabaloo for everybody.
So when you were running, though, the campaigning process, I mean, you had a strong platform. Did you have anything else that you think was really working in your favor, or do you think that it really was this truly substantial issue that you put forth?
I've never met a stranger, And I think that that helped. I think because I was able to just walk up to everyone and talk to them like I'd known them forever, where I was coming into a situation where most of these kids had known each other since kindergarten, that put me in a position where people trusted me, and they should have. They trusted me, and we became friends through the process. So they were voting for a new friend, essentially.
And so, unlike in reality TV shows, you did come there to make friends.
Yeah, I did. I liked people, and I liked people then, and I wanted to make friends, and I knew that food was a good way to do that.
Susan in Overland Park, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks.
So Susan made friends through politics. Let's talk to Julie Connor. She is with us here in the studio, and she had her own kind of positive experience running for student office, but maybe didn't start out quite like Susan. Hi, Julie.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Tell me a little bit about yourself and how you grew up.
Well, my experience is a bit different. I grew up during the 60s in St. Louis in an Irish Catholic family with parents who had a strong sense of social justice and contributing to the community. I remember even I was in kindergarten in 1963 when Kennedy died. I remember profoundly Walter Cronkite at the end of the news talking about the MIA and the POW reports. I remember the Kent State shootings. And even though I was awkward and bullied when I was in grade school into high school, I also knew in my gut, in my heart, in my soul that I was called to leadership. And I didn't know what that meant until I entered college. I traveled across the state to Warrensburg, Missouri to reinvent myself when I was in college. And at the Central Missouri State University, which was what it was called at the time, in 1977, I volunteered to represent my dorm on the Student Government Association. And I knew at the time, all I knew that student government did at that time was there were trash cans across the campus that had SGA on there. And I thought, maybe this is time to do a bit more. And where I was very grateful is...
So wait. You thought student government could do more than just put trash cans around.
Oh, absolutely. And I was very fortunate that all the spirit of the 60s came to Warrensburg during the 70s. And I thought during my junior year of college that I was going to study more. I didn't need to be in student government anymore. They had appointed me secretary, but I was going to work more on my studies. And when I arrived on the campus, I was told to report to Dr. Tom Edmonds, who was dean of student affairs.
You arrived on campus like in the fall, having been thinking that you're going to resign.
Absolutely. And I arrived on campus and was told to report to the Dean of Student Affairs. So I went to Tom Edmonds' office, and I was told that the president, the vice president, and the Speaker of the Senate had resigned, and I was the new president.
So catapulted into the highest office of student government.
Into leadership at a time that the Faculty Senate was in revolt at that time and it wasn't an outward revolt, but the president of the campus of the university at that time had served dramatically for 24 years to increase student enrollment. He had done a lot of wonderful things, but there were members of the Faculty Senate who felt that it was very much an anarchy system. And so they would meet me after class, and I was just a junior in college. And I saw this as a time to really be a voice of the students, not as a sole voice, but to bring the collaborative leadership.
You sound very passionate about the purpose of student government and the idea of government itself, which is that there are certain people who represent their peers.
Right.
But there are social dynamics at play here. We've sort of overlooked those. I mean, do you mind my asking where you fit into the social hierarchy? Because you did get to skip this whole election piece of becoming president.
When I stepped into office, there were lots of dynamics that were taking place at the time. One of the things that was taking place is there was a gentleman named Alvin Brooks. and he was on the Board of Regents. And we knew that there was a possibility that he was going to be replaced on the Board of Regents. So I rallied together the board of the student government in terms of writing a letter to appeal for his reassignment to the Board of Regents at that time. We knew that he may not be able to be reassigned in terms of the Board of Regents at that time, but we did want to show that our voice, the voice of the students, was behind it. And there were many things that were happening on campus at that time that allowed us to network with the community, not only with the campus, and the voice of the students became much more than just what are we going to do to promote a dance, but how can we be a voice of social change?
But so nobody like implied that you had not risen to office through the proper means or anything like that? Just
never.
That they hadn't voted for you?
Never.
So yeah, that's a smooth transfer of power.
Julie, well, because I don't think student government at that time was taken seriously. You know, we were the ones who did dances and bought trash cans for the campus. And all of a sudden, we were becoming this organic voice of the students on campus. And it was a very exciting time to, you know, at the time, there was the student newspaper was called the Mule Skinner. But there was also an underground newspaper called The Jackass. And it was a voice of all the things that needed to change on campus. And one day I was in the student union reading The Jackass, and somebody came up to me. His name was Jack Ventimiglia. And he came up to me and he said, "Can I buy you a cup of coffee?" And I didn't know at the time that he was the editor of The Jackass. And that really became a voice of the students in a very good way and a very positive way.
Do you mind if I compliment your recall for proper names?
Oh, thank you.
Julie, it sounds like you really had some success at effecting change through student government.
Yes.
And a really positive experience with it.
I was very lucky to be the first student representative on the presidential search and selection committee of the campus.
Well, we've still got Stu Schaefer here. And Stu, you had a different experience, as we've already heard, kind of pointing out the ridiculousness of your student government and then realizing at the end of it all, perhaps, that you could have done something with the platform about all of the issues that you cared about. It sounds a little bit like Julie did what maybe later in retrospect you realized you could have done.
Probably, yeah. I think that was something I might have been able to do in high school. Realistically, you know, it was high school, you know. I don't know if we would have made huge changes. We wouldn't have had, you know, kind of the university level influence. But it certainly affected, you know, my experience later in you know, when I did go to college and university and graduate school and then, you know, became a faculty member at a college. I've consistently been involved in various kinds of activism, organizing, leadership positions in all of those venues.
From within the system or outside the system?
Well, really both. For a long time, and continuing. I mean, you know, both in terms of non-governmental type organizations or, you know, movement type groups, to, you know, being president of the, you know, faculty union local, or, you know, now I'm on the board of directors of a rural organization in Kansas.
You both are so inspired, it seems, by the cultural currents of the 60s and 70s and what were sort of the big issues of that time. How do you think that there is a certain character that politics were taking at the time that influenced how you saw your position as student politicians or aspiring student politicians?
I think in my work, now I'm a speaker and an author, and the primary objective of my work is to prepare youth to be leaders and adults to be mentors and role models. And I believe that there is an inspiration that follows all generations. You know, Voltaire was once credited with once saying, "I may not agree with what you say, but I will defend with my life, you're right to say it, and I believe that's something that crosses all generations.
Julie, Stu, thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
When KCUR's Central Standard returns, City Councilman Quentin Lucas, representing the 3rd District at large, started his career as a politician back in the 5th grade. I'm Gina Kaufman. We'll be right back. We're back. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today's show here on KCUR's Central Standard is all about the body politic, the student body politic. City Councilman Quentin Lucas now joins us to share his election memories. And today, we're not so much interested in his bid to represent the 3rd District at large in City Council. We're interested in what happened when he ran for office in 5th grade and again in middle school. Hi, Quentin.
Hi, Gina. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Doing great.
So you got started in 5th grade, huh?
You know, I did, and it was kind of a simple issue, not quite as sophisticated as some of your guests, but I was running on a platform of greater recess rights.
What are recess rights?
We wanted to buy a football so that every recess we could go out and have that sport to play. And then others, I think we were arguing for a longer type of recess and more money for activities and games and that sort of thing.
A recess of the longer type.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So greater rights for those of us interested in recess. And somehow I was able to win with such a platform.
Yeah, because those of us interested in recess are all of us if it's 5th grade.
Yes.
Did you win?
You know, I did win. And, you know, the interesting thing was that the people who were my best supporters, let's say, were folks that didn't even play the same games that we did. I don't know if it's that we had this broad coalition or anything of the sort, but it certainly taught me that, you know, finding an issue, hopefully sometimes it's more substantive than just recess, but finding an issue can get some people kind of with you and you have compromise and you can start to make some change, even if it's as simple as buying a $14 football.
So what do you remember other than the issue about that campaign? Do you remember like your opponents? Did you have opponents?
I did. You know, I think the first thing I remember is actually it gets sometimes a little nastier than it needs to be, even at that level. Folks have their feelings hurt, even if they're, I guess, only 11 or 12. And so that was something that was somewhat surprising to me. And then I think the other thing that was interesting to me was how much, you know, I cared along the way. So it started with this thing that seems in some way superficial, but you convince yourself of the cause, you get kind of caught up in it, and next thing you know, you're actually trying to lead some coalition in support of it. So I remember that closely. I also remember, you know, one thing I'll say to anyone, I think as a boy, and I think we see this with men, I think it was easier for a boy to run than a girl and win election. In my memory, I think girls got made fun of a little more then. They were less likely to be respected, even at the middle school level.
As candidates.
And
but did everyone have an issue like you did? Or was it sort of similar across the board? We all want more recess and you saw this difference.
You know, I think there were actually issues on the other side. I'm trying to think. So my leading opponent was a female, and I'm forgetting what exactly her issue was. Somehow I was able to convince everyone that recess is a broad universal goal, and perhaps she was only hitting something that reached out to a smaller group of people. So that was, I think, what the discussion was at the time.
So you mentioned hurt feelings. Did that bother you at the time, even as the winner?
It did. It still does. You know, I think some of us have this desire to try to bring everyone on board and to think that we're running not so much against people, but for something. And I think campaigns and elections and kind of anything that's fundamentally adversarial ends up avoiding that in some ways. And people can think that either you're being mean or you're not waiting a turn or you're doing something that's unnecessary. So we didn't have big signs or nasty elections, and it certainly wasn't anything like a competitive high school election. But at the same time, I certainly started to see the beginning of some battles and some hurt feelings along the way.
You mentioned even with a superficial platform, getting really caught up in the spirit of the competition and starting to be convinced of your cause. Thinking back on this as now a a politician, like, beyond the school level. Do you, I mean, do you hear in that inspiration or maybe a cautionary tale?
You know, I think I primarily hear inspiration. I think there are a lot of people who think, and if we look perhaps at some recent elections, we fear that it's all becoming too much of a popularity contest and anyone with a strong enough name ID can rise to the top. I think that there's still currency among fifth graders or currency among adults for folks that actually stand for something and unite around some sort of issue. And it might not be my issue, it might not be yours, but at least you can say, okay, this is what they really think about, instead of just being someone who's running for God knows which reason.
And then you ran again in middle school, right? I mean, we've been talking about your fifth grade election, but it sounds like you liked the experience enough to do it again fairly soon.
I did. You know, I ran again, and in some ways, I didn't have the same issue. I grew up just a bit over those years, but I think then the next time I ran, I really thought that there were kind of a set of interests that I had and some of my friends shared, and that they wouldn't be represented if not for me stepping up. And so that was what encouraged me to run again. I actually didn't particularly, let's say, enjoy or think that student government was a thing for me. But I just thought, well, someone has to actually stand up for this, or else this viewpoint will never be shared fully.
Do you remember specifically what the viewpoint was?
You know, I think by the time I was late in middle school, it was something relating to study halls and what we could do with them. I seem to be one who really enjoys recreation.
Minimally supervised time.
Yes. And so I think it was having more ability either to not be in a set classroom during that time or something of that sort. I've since found some more issues, but I actually do think that in some ways I supported kind of more liberty for students, and, you know, this idea that we could be trusted to make responsible choices walking around the school building. And so that was what I was pushing back then.
Because that's really a question of respect, right?
Yes, yes, absolutely. I mean, I think it was important that, you know, we all have the chance to be respected, to actually, I guess, be recognized as folks with some sort of agency in what we're doing. And I thought that that should be reflected among the student body as well.
What do you remember about how you ran your campaign this time? Was it different than your fifth grade campaigning style?
Yes. I mean, it was. I mean, I think I talked to people a bit more. I think I actually had to have a plethora of issues to talk about, whereas in fifth grade, I could get away with saying football, more recess, right? And that was kind of sufficient. There were people who would ask me all of a sudden new questions, right? What did I think about something that I wasn't necessarily concerned about? For example, a future homecoming or something of that sort. I guess it was middle school, so whatever dance was at that phase. But I had to actually be able to speak to more people and more issues in connection with that.
So did you win?
I did. I did. I've been lucky along the way. I've had a winning streak for a few decades now, but it was without some nervousness.
Do you think that if it had turned out differently and you had lost, do you think you might have lost your taste for politics? Or no, was by the time you were in campaign mode, you were hooked?
You know, I don't think I would have lost my taste for politics. I mean, I did not run for things for a period of years and avoided it in college, although there were some significant issues. But, you know, I think I've always had this view that where I could actually make some sort of difference, that I would just throw my hat in the ring and at least either try to have some vocal influence or an electoral one.
All right. Well, Quentin Lucas, hang on with me, because you have mentioned that you think that even at the fifth grade level, it was easier for boys to run for office than for girls, that girls got maybe a little harsher criticism, maybe a little more personal style of criticism. We have Karen on the line from Kansas City. And Karen, what was your experience?
I ran for student body president in junior high. And my biggest adversary actually was the administration. I was the first female to ever run for that office. And I got a lot of pushback from the administration.
What style of pushback?
Well, I was accused of things, and
what kinds
I got
of things,
trouble.
Though? I mean, this is crazy.
I'm in junior high. Smoking. Just the administration did not want me to win the election. I do think that it was harder for me to run as a female, but I wasn't ready for that to be the institution that made it harder. But I do think it was harder for a female to run.
So what ended up happening? How, first of all, did you ever consider quitting, given that, I mean, not only is there the question of will people vote for you, but there's just the question of, like, the school itself was against you.
You know, I don't remember if I considered quitting. I'm not the quitter type. I did probably suffer some consequences because of the election, but I did win, and I was able to get past a few things, again, that the administration wasn't favorable for, one of them being that girls at that time were not allowed to wear pants in school, and that was one of my campaign issues, was I wanted girls to be able to wear pants.
That's pretty
and
sweet.
We won the right to be able to wear them on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and they had to be slacks.
Slacks on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Karen, thank you so much. City Councilman Quentin Lucas, you know, the popularity contest piece of this comes up again and again. The identity politics, whether it's that you're a female candidate or that maybe you're, you know, we've heard one of our guests mention being one of the theater kids or versus whether you're a football kid and the smart kid, whatever. Do you think that there is a popularity contest element to elections at every level, or does that peter out?
I'd say I think there is that popularity contest at every level. We've seen that in national politics and even more localized, where there's this view sometimes that, well, no one likes this guy or gal, or how could anyone get used to them or be comfortable with them or have a beer with them? And I think we see that start in grade school, and it kind of continues and in some ways amplifies over time.
Do you think that there's anything legitimate to that? I mean, thinking about maybe trusting your instincts about people or something like that, or do you think that that's misguided?
You know, I take your point there. I think that there is something legitimate about that. I don't think it should outweigh competence and ideas and what you really believe in, as opposed to actually just voting for someone because they play on your team or they look like you or sound like you or live in a similar neighborhood. And I think what we have to stay mindful of is that we don't encourage that either at the larger national or local level, because I think it does start to trickle down to our children who are saying, gosh, maybe this is all I should care about too.
Do you think that looking forward, I mean, do you think that there's anything that you will continue taking from your young political experiences to inform your grown-up political career?
Absolutely. It's just trying. You know, folks should just try. And so if you're an angry fifth grader or you're an angry adult or a happy one, feel free to just, you know, throw your name in the hat.
Our time is up for today's show. Quentin Lucas, Kansas City City Council representing Kansas City's 3rd District at Large. Thanks for taking time out of your day to talk to us.
Thank you.
Have you voted yet?
You know, I have not, so I better go now.
Yeah, you better. Have a great day.
Thanks.
You can listen back to this show at kcur.org/centralstandard. That's kcur.org/centralstandard. And thanks for spending your Independence Day weekend remembering that there's nothing more American than voting. That's a wrap. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, and Andrea Tudhope. This has been a rebroadcast from Election Day 2016. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned to KCUR.